This is Ozarks at Large for Tuesday, November 24th, 2020, on your public radio station, 91.3 KUAF, a listener-supported service of the J. William Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. Ahead, how restaurants are trying to survive a year with closures, reduced capacity, and a large amount of the public hesitant to eat inside. Ozarks at Large's Daniel Carruth has that report. And Ozarks at Large's Zuzanna Sitek will deliver an update on the plight of renters and landlords as the pandemic continues into a ninth month. After our show on Here and Now, while a COVID-19 vaccine is on the horizon, the disease is spreading faster and in more parts of the country than ever before. A full report on Here and Now, beginning at 1. The Arkansas Department of Health is reporting 30 new confirmed deaths from COVID-19 in the most recent 24-hour monitoring period, bringing the state's fatality total from the disease to 2,387. There were 912 new confirmed cases from the nearly 10,700 PCR tests administered in the most recent 24 hours, another 105 probable new cases from 890 PCR tests. While the number of active cases in the state dropped by more than 900, there are now fewer than 17,000 active cases, the number of people in Arkansas hospitals with the virus increased by a dozen. There are now 974 Arkansas hospitalizations. Northwest Arkansas hospitals have 98 patients in COVID-19 units. That's the same number as when the weekend began, still lower than the high of 113 in July. Since Labor Day, though, the growth of people in Northwest Arkansas requiring hospitalization because of the disease has grown exponentially, according to a press release from Northwest Arkansas healthcare providers. Washington, Benton, and Sebastian counties continue to be among the counties with the most new cases each day. The football game Saturday between Arkansas and Missouri in Columbia, Missouri, will not take place this weekend. That because of concerns about coronavirus with the Arkansas team. A new date for the game has yet to be announced, and that postponement has had an effect on other SEC games this weekend. Missouri will now host Vanderbilt on Saturday, and the Vanderbilt-Tennessee game originally set for this weekend has been postponed. The National Weather Service offers a 90% chance of rain throughout the night tonight, with new rainfall amounts of between a quarter inch and a half inch possible. Lows tonight in the lower to mid-40s. Tomorrow, clouds in the morning, sunshine by afternoon, with highs in the 40s in northwest Arkansas tomorrow, 50s in the Arkansas River Valley. And the Thanksgiving Day forecast, not too bad. Mostly sunny, highs from 63 to 67. This is Ozarks at Large. With the Centers for Disease Control advising against holiday travel this year, people across the country are settling into the reality of a pandemic Thanksgiving. And restaurants and food suppliers are also adjusting to meet customer needs for a less than traditional holiday. Ozarks at Large's Daniel Carruth reports.
Last week, Arkansas State Health Secretary Jose Romero laid out new CDC guidelines for the Thanksgiving holiday.
So you should not really be thinking of traveling a lot to go across the country to see your relatives. And even within the state, you should probably not engage in that. A nuclear Thanksgiving, that is a family, really family-centered Thanksgiving, less than 10 people, certainly would be advisable, and preferably just the people that are living in your home at that time.
So with big traditional family dinners now off the table, restaurants are seeing a silver lining in what has so far been a bleak year. Smaller numbers make it easier for people to dine in for Thanksgiving, or more likely, to take their feast to go.
So make that mixture and chill it. Make that mixture and chill it into a pan.
At the Farmer's Table Cafe in Fayetteville, a kitchen manager preps bread for dressing to put in this week's Thanksgiving takeout orders.
Butter on top of that.
The Farmer's Table is offering to-go orders of sides, appetizers, breads, and desserts. Basically everything except the turkey, owner Adrian Schoenfeld says.
It's actually something we've always wanted to do in the past, but this year we were a little bit more organized in advance This has been a year of thinking outside the box and getting creative. Our busiest times of year are April and May, and then October and November. So these two times of the year, we really rely on good sales to kind of get us through the slower winter months.
Schonfield says she's seen an increase in sales for the holiday meals, but most of the orders are for groups of 2 to 4 people.
Yeah, it's definitely an increase, but it's just different. We used to always just do everything in big hotel pans that would feed a crowd. So this year we've adjusted that a little bit, and we're doing any size party. And I've noticed that a lot of our orders are for a lot smaller groups this year.
Annie Clapper is a baker and owner of The Family Crumb, a wholesale bakery in Bentonville.
Yes. So COVID Thanksgiving is an interesting one. Last Thanksgiving is vastly different from this year in terms of prep, because last year I was in a commercial space, and then in March I moved everything back into my house. So it's a lot more preparation actually this week, because I'm preparing all the small items like the dough and everything this week, because next week it's just me doing everything out of my home oven. So it's a lot of prep this week for like cookies, cinnamon rolls, pretzels, bagels, all of that. And then next week will just be like a bread frenzy.
For Clapper, the holidays are an important time for her business to generate revenue. But this year, the pandemic has already forced her to move from an industrial kitchen to her home, and that cut down on some of her operations.
The differences are that I'm not doing any pickups in person. So everything is contactless in a cabinet on my porch. So there's no impulse sales. So that's a big difference. As far as traffic goes, I think it's about the same. The reason it might be a little less is that my capacity is lower. I just can't do as much as I could out of a commercial space. So my situation is very specific to this season.
She says restrictions because of COVID-19 are affecting Thanksgiving meals for a lot of her customers.
Something that has happened really this entire pandemic season of all of our lives is people are willing to spend more on their groceries because it's the things that will bring them joy when there's not as much joy to draw from. I have some customers who are saying, it's just me and my people in my house this year, and we'd love to make sure we have extra special bread on the table. So it really is a mixed bag. I think most people are keeping it simple and close quarters, small groups that they're already sort of in a pod with.
And while at-home dinners and gatherings have gotten a lot of attention this year for the possibility of COVID-19 spread, in recent years, more restaurants have stayed open on the holiday. And according to the National Restaurant Association, roughly 10% of Americans dined out for Thanksgiving in 2019. Saber Rochel is director of sales and operations for the Inn at Carnal Hall on the University of Arkansas campus, which operates a restaurant, Ella's Table. Rochel says serving a Thanksgiving meal is a kind of tradition for the restaurant.
I don't even know of a year it's been missed in a long time. So we did want to continue that this year, but with precautions, of course. So we are still doing the buffet, and we'll basically have it set up in the lobby, and we'll have 3 dining rooms. So we're going to use our actual Ella's dining room itself. We're going to use and our 2 banquet spaces. So diners will be spread out amongst 3 separate spaces, and mask will be required until you're offered food or beverage at your table. And then the way the buffet is going to work is we'll have staff attendants serving all the meals, so no guest will touch any of the utensils.
Rochel says they're offering the meals as a to-go option as well. And so far, Ella's Table has gotten about 100 reservations.
And I mean, in the past, we've had, you know, closer to over 400 or 500 throughout that whole time frame. So it's definitely down from the past. But, you know, we're pleasantly surprised with the turnout.
And most of those reservations are from locals and repeat customers. But group sizes are smaller than usual. And Rochel says she knew this year wouldn't generate a normal revenue, but it was important just to offer people some sense of normalcy on Thanksgiving.
the tradition itself is important, and then just making sure, you know, we're still here for the community. And of course, staff, you know, it's all hands on deck kind of day. Everybody gets excited about it. So it's a huge economic boost going into the holidays when, you know, campus is closing and things are kind of dying down. It's, however, this year we knew that wasn't going to be the case. And it's, this year it's really more about being open, being here, being for the, you know, having offerings for the community in this kind of crazy time.
On the day before Thanksgiving, Annie Clapper is joining other local bakers for a socially distanced Thanksgiving bake sale hosted by Two Friends Books in Bentonville. She says while the event will help make up some lost revenue, it's almost more about offering something festive during a trying time.
I think everyone is just excited to see other people. Being a cottage baker in particular can be really isolating. And then when you're isolating within the isolation of your field, you can miss other people. But I think all of my like local baker friends who are participating in this, we're all just excited to see each other and dork out about baking together.
And back at the farmer's table, Adrienne Schonfield hopes her comfort food can do just that for anyone missing out this Thanksgiving.
You know, we're doing mac and cheese and Gouda grits and sweet potatoes and just some of those traditional classic holiday items that maybe you don't really want to cook yourself or it's too much work to cook for just one or two people, but you can still get a taste of the holidays.
For Ozarks at Large, I'm Daniel Carruth.
Earlier this month, the state of Arkansas launched the Fresh Start program, which provides $10 million in federal CARES Act funding to assist renters who owe up to 2.5 months of back rent because of the pandemic. But the agreement requires landlords to waive all late fees to get the money, which is being distributed by community action agencies across the state. As Ozarks at Large's Susanna Sitek reports, applications for assistance have been pouring in, and numerous renters are being denied because their landlords will not accept the terms of the program.
I actually lost several hours at my job.
This is a woman we're going to call Jane. She's a renter at one of Lindsay Management's apartment complexes in Fayetteville.
I was working for a call center company that ships us equipment to work off of when the equipment failed. They had to ship me new equipment, but because of the pandemic, it was taking weeks at a time to get that equipment shipped out to people. So I actually lost almost 4 weeks of work just waiting on my equipment to get shipped out.
That left Jane without the money she needed to pay for this month's rent. And as of November 4th, she's been accruing a $10 a day late fee, which means on top of her rent, she also owes nearly $200 in late fees. Jane is one of the thousands of Arkansans who are eligible for rental assistance through the state's Fresh Start program. She applied and qualified, but was ultimately denied the aid because her landlord refused to waive late fees, which is a program requirement.
And what Lindsay is doing is they are taking that form and then rewriting in their own terms into the document, which invalidates it, signing it and sending it back. Well, because they've invalidated it, they've essentially refused payment from the EOA.
The EOA is the Economic Opportunity Agency located in Springdale. Once renters who live in Washington County apply for rental assistance through the state's Fresh Start program website, their application goes to the EOA, which determines if they qualify and then releases funding directly to landlords who agree to the terms of the program. Jane says she heard about Fresh Start through the EOA after receiving aid from the agency earlier in the pandemic.
So I actually heard about Fresh Start because I had used the EOA at the beginning of this pandemic when I had lost my previous job because of it. And I had used them before, and Lindsay had actually accepted payment from them before. So I figured, hey, I'd try it again because once again, I was behind on my rent because of issues with COVID. And I was pretty confident that it would go through and was honestly really surprised when they declined payment.
Jane says she's also angry and upset because she's lived in her apartment for the last 4 years.
I haven't been a short-term Lindsay resident. I've always rented through Lindsay. And my leasing manager at this complex is actually really cool. He's really understanding, and he's done a lot to kind of work with the tenants around this. And unfortunately, corporate kind of went above him and pulled rank, and he can't do anything about it. So we're kind of just stuck in a sinking ship.
Jane has tried getting in touch with Lindsay Management herself, but so far, she hasn't been able to speak to anyone at the company.
I actually did call their legal department to see if I could figure out why they were declining payment, because it made no sense to me that a business would decline money. And they have refused to reach back out. They have refused to even discuss it with me. They sent me straight to voicemail and never call me back.
Delia Anderson Farmer is the executive director of the EOA. She says other renters have also been denied assistance after their landlords refused to waive late fees. And because the program is funded by the state, her agency doesn't have any control over the terms of the agreement.
So that has been a challenge for some landlords. There are a lot of independent landlords that are willing to sign and don't have an issue. In fact, some of them have been very lenient on late fees during this pandemic, which is commendable, but it just doesn't apply across the board. And when that happens, then that family is ineligible for the Fresh Start program.
On top of that, Anderson Farmer says the agency won't be able to help everyone who applied. The Fresh Start program began accepting applications on November 9th, and in 1 week, the EOA received more than 900 of them.
So that lets you know the significant need in the area for rental assistance and the number of families that have been impacted by the COVID-19 pandemic. So we knew that we would receive a high number of applications, but we did not realize that we would receive that many so soon.
At this point, the EOA is no longer able to take applications because they're limited by the amount of funding they have. Anderson Farmer says they've received $143,000 for the first phase of the program, which was supposed to last 6 weeks. In the second phase, the agency will receive another $200,000.
This first phase, the numbers were just through the roof in terms of the number of applications that we received. But we have a waiting list, and we have continued to keep families on the waiting list. And as funding continues to come in for this program, we will certainly start with those families that are already waiting for assistance.
The EOA is one of 15 community action agencies in Arkansas charged with administering the $10 million allocated to the Fresh Start program. Anderson Farmer says the need for assistance varies across the state, but Washington County stands out because of its population size and the number of people who are within the range of eligibility.
This program will serve families up to 200% of poverty, which is a little higher than the income that we normally serve in our other programs that we have at EOA, but still that's low to moderate income. And so we are near the top of the need in the state.
And she adds the need for rental assistance was high before the pandemic. So COVID-19 has only exacerbated the problem.
There are so many people that have lost jobs this year. They have reduced hours on their jobs. It has just been really tough for people. So we are definitely seeing an increase across all of the programs that we have, particularly the programs for emergency services. So we are at a crisis point. People are at a crisis point right now. And we're going to try to do the best that we can to help as many people as possible.
Anderson Farmer says she's concerned about what that will mean for Washington County's low-income residents as we head into the winter months.
Because we want them to have the support they need, but right now there isn't enough. We just don't have enough funding right now to help everyone.
While there doesn't appear to be any additional rental assistance funding on the horizon, other than what's already been allocated, Anderson Farmer says the EOA can provide Springdale, Fayetteville, and Tawnytown water customers with up to $100 in aid on their bills. The agency will also be reopening its low-income home energy assistance program in January. And she adds the community can step in to help as well.
If there are people in the community that want to know, what can they do? Because a lot of times people want to know how they can help. If they would like to help a family, support a family, they can certainly reach out to EOA, and we will ensure that those funds are used for that purpose.
As for Jane, she says she can't understand why Lindsay Management won't accept the funding, and she's not entirely sure what she'll do next.
It's going to be extremely hard. I'm probably just going to put this place up for at least take over, and hopefully someone can take over my lease. If not, then we're probably going to be you're living in my car or stuck here if Lindsay decides to turn around and reverse their mindset on this.
We reached out to Lindsay Management a number of times regarding their stance on waiving late fees for Fresh Start funding recipients, but have not heard back from the company. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Zuzana Sitek.
The Crawford-Sebastian Community Development Council, which is administering Fresh Start funds in Crawford and Sebastian counties, has also stopped taking applications for aid. In Benton, Carroll, and Madison counties, the program is being administered by Our Healthy Communities, and that community action agency is still accepting applications for funding.
Ozarks at Large is underwritten, in part, by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. It's time for the annual KUAF and Friends Holiday Giveaway. It's your chance to win a gift from KUAF and one of many generous KUAF underwriters. Participants include Fayetteville Roots Festival, Downtown Springdale Alliance, Dog Party USA, and more. Winners announced Friday, December 11th during the noon edition of Ozarks at Large. Details and registration available at KUAF.com.
This is Ozarks at Large. For political conversations, there are some pieces of low-hanging fruit. The transition from one White House administration to the next, the ongoing effects of a global pandemic, but there are other matters as well. The Arkansas legislature will convene in January, and Roby Brock, with our partner Talk Business and Politics, is wondering about the future of Arkansas's Medicaid waiver. And he's asking his conversation partner, John Brummett, a columnist with the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, about that and more this week.
Arkansas's Medicaid waiver is up for renewal from almost 10 years ago when Mike Beebe and the Republicans crafted this private option. Of course, the Affordable Care Act is in some jeopardy now with the Supreme Court case. And Asa said in that interview that he is working with legislators to try to craft a new Medicaid waiver that will be palatable to the Republicans. He's got bigger supermajorities in the Republican legislature now, and I'd argue some more conservative Republicans than you had prior to 2020. Do you think Arkansas Works is in danger? Do you think Arkansas's Medicaid waiver can be navigated successfully? Is it enough ingrained in society now that even some of these reluctant Republicans go along with it?
Reluctant Republicans go along with continuing the Medicaid expansion or reapplying for a waiver in order to facilitate the way we do Medicaid expansion?
I would say the latter.
The latter. I tend to think, but I'm telling you, I'm just, every day as I ponder more what happened in Arkansas and look at the Arkansas legislature, it's, and I look at the Senate committees, look at the Senate committee membership. The most right-wing ones have stacked themselves in the most influential places, like on Stand Your Ground or hate crimes, which I'll be writing about later this week. I'm not prepared to speak with any degree of confidence that reason can prevail in the climate, in the amid the consequences of elections. And we just had an election, and the consequence is we're redder than red. And that's just the way it is. I'd already worried about whether you could produce the three-fourths majorities, the usual fight. Can you get that done for the Medicaid expansion? You, as you point out, our whole basis for that, this very clever, innovative waiver that we got, can we get it? Can the one, will the state Republican legislature permit it, go for it? And two, will the new Democratic administration go along with it? I think yes. I hope yes. Surely. I mean, what we've done out here has been nationally regarded. We've done well in fashioning our own way. And it's had influence on other states. So I hope so. But this is just, again, it's a cliche. Elections have consequences. And an innovative program to help poor people in a state that's gone as extreme right as we have gone in our legislature, we're just going to have to stand back and hope for the best, I think.
COVID-19 could impact that somewhat in terms of it has hurt the healthcare system so much, been so detrimental that financially it might make sense to keep Arkansas Works in place. We'll see, but that'll be an interesting battle in the upcoming legislative session.
Yeah, so. Do you want to reduce health care and health care availability right now? Probably not the time.
Yeah. So you mentioned guns will be a big issue this next session. Hate crimes legislation will be a big battle this next session. There'll be a number of abortion debates, pro-life, pro-choice debates in this next legislative session. But to me, taxes are going to be where there's going to be a lot of action. There are a lot of competing ideas out there. Where do you rank the governor's 4.9% for out-of-state residents being the highest income tax rate, this proposal to help recruit more out-of-state residents here?
Well, I made unmerciful fun of it last week from whatever school of thought I come from.
What was the reaction to that?
I got praised by Trent Garner on Twitter. This caused me to write a retraction, which I then decided not to publish. I think with all due respect to the governor, he offends the right-wing constituent-wary legislators by saying, vote to give a newcomer to the state a lower tax rate than your highest income, most important constituents back home. That's not going to happen. Then he offends me from the left by, one, just thinking cutting taxes to a lower rate is going to get people to come here, which is a proven invalid notion, but also compounding it with inequality. If you've been here doing business, you're going to have to pay a higher rate than somebody we prostitute ourselves for in a plea, please come here. I think it's as dead can be, and I certainly hope so.
John Brummett is a political writer with the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, and Roby Brock is with our partner, Talk Business and Politics. Their conversation also includes discussion about Lieutenant Governor Tim Griffin's thoughts about eliminating Arkansas's income tax and more. You can find more from John Brummett and Roby Brock at talkbusiness.net. And more conversation about words is just ahead. A new session with our militant grammarian, Catherine Sherrills, in less than 1 minute on this Tuesday, Ozarks at Large.
Hello, this is Rhonda Dillard, and I'm the underwriting director at KUAF. Listeners, supporters, and underwriters hold a very special place in my heart. Your interaction with this public radio station makes our work possible and enjoyable. Thank you for being you, and thank you for being a part of this public radio station.
This is Ozarks at Large. My realtor grammarian, Catherine Sherrills, is here. And by here, I mean my front porch on Mount Sequoia. We're having fun, even though this has not been a great fun year. And we can't be in the Converse Center for Public Radio. We're socially distanced out here. We can have more fun today.
It's quite pleasant.
Yes. Yes.
One of my favorite parts of doing these segments is that I learned so many terms for aspects of language. And I learned a new one this time. Okay, Kyle, you know what onomatopoeia is.
Onomatopoeia is a word that sounds like the sound it makes.
So like?
Bang, slap.
Buzz,
yes.
Sizzle, cuckoo.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Less known but in a similar vein are autological or homological words. Autological words express a characteristic that they also possess.
I know you're going to give me examples, but I cannot think of what that would be.
Let me give you an example.
Please.
Word.
I'm not following.
So it is a word. It is a collection.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Oh, it's very meta. Because it's a word that is a word.
Yeah.
I get you.
That's
okay.
It. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. We're going to get kind of woo-woo here.
Okay.
That's right. Autological words have a tendency to be cheeky.
Okay.
A word is, you know, a word. This is probably the most basic, clear definition of an autological word. Noun falls in a similar category.
Sure, because noun is a noun.
Yeah. But words, adjectives, and verbs are actually nouns.
Exactly.
So they are not autological.
Right.
Okay, Kyle, I want you to explain why these words are autological.
Mm-hmm.
Buzzword.
Well, a buzzword is something. Oh, because buzzword is a buzzword.
That's right.
It had to start as a buzzword. Right.
And I think you might have discovered
yes.
the answer to each
yes,
of these.
That's right.
Unhyphenated.
Because it's hyphenated? No, it's unhyphenated. Wait. How does that work?
How do you spell it?
U-N hyphen. Well, I don't know.
You don't have your AP style book in your head.
No, I do not. Is unhyphenated? hyphenated?
Mm-mm.
No, unhyphenated is unhyphenated. Yeah. That's why it's autological.
Yeah.
That's the first time that sentence has ever been there said in English
language. There are indeed no hyphens in this word.
Right.
However, hyphenated does not have a hyphen.
Right.
So it's not autological.
Right. Okay.
It reminds me of a favorite T-shirt I saw once. It asked, does anal retentive have a hyphen? I love that. Okay. Kyle, do you know the definition of erudite?
Oh, gosh. I mean, it's erudite. Let's see if I do.
Okay.
I would say it is someone who is of upper class, of high culture.
Yeah, and how do you get high culture?
Through education or through society? Education.
Yes.
Okay.
Scholarly.
Yes.
Yeah. So erudite means scholarly, mm-hmm. and it's a very
erudite word.
Scholarly word. That's yes. Right.
Fraser Crane. That word makes me think of Fraser Crane. Yes. Yeah.
Kyle, do you happen to know the meaning of sesquipedalian?
Well, sesquicentennial is, what, 150 years, so that's going to be, am I on the right track?
No.
Okay. Thank you for stopping me.
Well, let me ask you this. Why do you think it's autological? How would you describe it as a word?
Give me the word again.
Sesquipedalian.
It means a word that's hard to pronounce.
No, but that's a good shot.
Okay.
What else? What's another characteristic
it's,
of it?
It means it means obscure.
Nope.
It means long.
There you go.
Okay.
That's
okay.
Right. Sesquipedalian uh-huh. means long word. And it comes from the Latin word sesquipedalius, meaning a foot and a half.
That's awesome.
This article that I read for this said, it gave the example of short. But I don't think short's a short
that's
word.
It's middle.
Yeah.
Yeah. Medium. Medium would be autological,
yeah,
right?
Probably.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm, I think so. Okay, Kyle, what does polysyllabic mean?
One syllable. And it's got several.
Yeah. Poly. Yeah.
Right. Right.
Polysyllabic. Syllabic means lots of syllables.
Lots
and
of
polysyllabic
syllables,
has five syllables.
Right.
Okay, Kyle.
But monosyllabic.
That is not autological.
Right.
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 Now, Kyle, if you know the meaning of this next one, mm-hmm. you're clearly out of my league.
Oh, well, I'm not that, so.
Propoxetone.
No.
Okay. It's P-R-O-P-A-R-O-X-Y-T-O-N-E. Propoxetone. It means a word that is stressed on the third to last syllable.
Why does that exist?
Why didn't you just say it?
Why does that word exist? It must be for some sort of speech or musical thing or something.
It's academia, you know. Okay, but so tell me why propoxetone is propoxetone.
Because ox is where you're uh-huh. putting that stress,
that's
yes.
That's right. Now, there's more to the story.
Okay.
The definition of propoxetone originally read, before I edited it, a word with stress on the antepenultimate syllable.
Wait, antepenultimate, because penultimate is next to last.
What's the word that you hear in that?
Penultimate is the next to last.
Right. And so what do people,
they think it means the ultimate or the last.
The ultimate.
Right.
Yeah, the best.
But, right.
Yeah.
But what is antepenultimate?
It means one more back.
Okay. So.
As in the third from the last syllable.
Well, I got to start using that
now. The antepenultimate syllable.
That's awesome.
I just love that.
Yeah. I wonder if there's a word for the fourth from last.
I don't know.
Something antepenultimate.
What is
pre-antepenultimate?
Yeah, there we go.
All right.
And then if it's got more than five, if it's polysyllabic, forget it.
Yeah, there you go. There you go.
Okay, so we've learned another word term or three.
Yes. Catherine Sherald is our militant grammarian.
The University of Arkansas Clinton School of Public Service is now accepting applications for its online degree program. Public service professionals looking to advance their careers can learn without relocating or disrupting lives. Application deadline is December 1st. ClintonSchool.uasys.edu or 501-683-5228. It's time for the annual KUAF and Friends Holiday Giveaway. It's your chance to win a gift from KUAF and one of many generous KUAF underwriters. Participants include American Shaman Kava Bar, Woodstone Craft Pizza, Botanical Garden of the Ozarks, and more. Winners announced Friday, December 11th during the noon edition of Ozarks at Large. Details and registration available at KUAF.com.
This is Ozarks at Large. Live music is gradually being staged again. Gradually. Shows are incorporating social distancing procedures into the experience. For the Emmett Cohen Trio performance at the Walton Arts Center, Saturday, December 5th, the show is being moved from the Intimate Star Theater to the nearly 1,200-seat Baumwalker Hall. But attendance will still be limited to about 200 people. Robert Ginsberg, the host of KUAF's Shades of Jazz every weekend, recently talked with Cohen about the upcoming show, about learning his skills in the jazz clubs of New York City, and about how the other musicians in his trio helped him musically survive and thrive during the past 8 months. Here's a portion of their conversation.
You create a kind of vibe that feels like we're in your living room and witnessing an unfolding of this joyous creation right along with you guys in the band. And it's just so relaxed and personal. How do you achieve that?
Yeah, well, I think that we are actually more than a band. We're family. And it's been that way since I met Russell Hall. And when he was in high school, I was in college. So that's been 9 years we've been friends. And Kyle Poole, when we moved to New York, he was running a jam session down at Smalls. And we would go play and hang every week for years and years. And so I've known him for 8 years. And we've just gotten very close over those years, and a very formative time in New York. We all live a block away from each other, which, you know, helped us to be able to quarantine together, you know, throughout this year, 2020. And, you know, we share an equal love of the music as well. And I think that's what really bonds us together. You know, we sit all night and listen to Louis Armstrong and Fats Waller and Bud Powell and Thelonious Monk and Cedar Walton and Barry Harris and Wynton Marsalis, whatever it is. You know, we sit there and we listen to it and we all hear it and ingest it in the same way. And then I think that helps when we go to play. We've ingested all this music and we can then, you know, really be on the same page about what we want our music to do in the world and how we want it to sound, you know, in the room, and what we want it to do for humanity, which is even bigger than those, you know?
You became involved with music as a toddler and have stayed the course with great enthusiasm and a prodigious output of artful creations. Can you describe how your relationship with music has evolved over the years and what it means to you now?
Well, it's something that I can't remember life without. I started playing at 3, Suzuki piano, which is learning by ear. And that really lends itself to playing jazz later on, I think, because the ear is developed and you're used to learning, you know, in that oral way, which so much of jazz is about. Growing up, it was a struggle to want to, you know, be outside and be playing on sports teams and be doing other various extracurricular things. But I went to middle school and high school in Montclair, New Jersey, and there I got a chance to see and meet some jazz musicians. My father would take me to go see guys like Monty Alexander, Ahmed Jamal, or Marcus Roberts, Ray Charles, I remember, Jimmy Smith. at the Blue Note on organ. So I got a chance in my formative years to hear a lot of and see a lot of great music. He would take me to see Keith Jarrett. And so seeing those jazz musicians, though, made me want to be around the music as much as possible. So I was in high school, and there was a jam session that would go on at Cecil's Jazz Club in West Orange, New Jersey, run by Cecil Brooks III, great drummer who played with all the organ players. And there I learned to play Hammond B3, and I would go sit in every Tuesday night. And a bunch of musicians from the neighborhood would come in, and we'd have a jam session, and I was forced to learn these tunes on the organ. So I was like, okay, how can I walk a bass line on Bye Bye Blackbird for 45 minutes when everyone takes a solo? And it's not like practicing in the practice room. Like, you have to execute on the bandstand. You can't stop and start over. And it's that the experiential learning like that allows you, or allows one, to really just come into the music and just be the music in real time and not, overthink anything. It's just like, you have to do it. And if you mess something up, then that's when you go home to the practice room and you fix that and you get another chance. I always loved the music, and I think I always knew deep down that it was something that I was meant to be doing, because I've been able to connect with all kinds of people all over the world. It's brought me to countless countries. So it's really expanded the world for me, and it's really allowed me to connect with other human beings on a deeper level. I mean, we can go to Japan and be sitting in the jam session and can't say one word to the saxophone player, but all he has to do is start playing Jerome Kern's All the Things You Are, and we're immediately locked in and on the same page. And that's, those couple of things are really huge for me in terms of the humanity in the music.
Your reverence for the living jazz masters has brought you to create a series of recordings that features them. It's called the Legacy Series. And I'm curious to hear more about how that project came about.
When I first moved to New York, I joined the Dizzy Gillespie Alumni Big Band. And playing first tenor in the band at that time was Jimmy Heath. And I remember, doing gigs with Jimmy Heath, accompanying him, and also just hanging out with him. We played New Year's Eve, I think maybe 2013, something like that, in D.C. at the Kennedy Center. And I rode the bus down with the band, and I was sitting kind of catty cornered to Jimmy Heath, and he started, just talking all these stories and talking about Charlie Parker borrowing his horn, and talking about, his two brothers and growing up, and John Coltrane and Philadelphia in that time. And it was just an incredible thing that I had never experienced before. And I was like, in all my studies and all my learnings, I haven't had this experience. And I think this is the real thing. This is what will bring me closer to what I want to achieve. This is what I want to know about. And this will help me be able to play as well. And so that was, my foray into the masters, and understanding that I needed to, be around them in order to understand the music more deeply. And so then I, decided to create a series called the Masters Legacy Series, which was designed, to bring my entire generation closer to the jazz masters, and also to bring them closer to us, and to instill this sense of affirmation and vitality, and just, hey, look, we know all the records you played on. We know all the stuff about you. We respect you to the nth degree, and we want to learn from you, and we want to play with you. And it was well received by Benny Golson, by Jimmy and Tootie Heath, by Ron Carter, by Jimmy Cobb,
George Coleman,
who I played with last weekend at Smoke Jazz Club. And I started hiring them, they started hiring me, and I would introduce them to my peers. And it is a beautiful forum for exchange between the generations, which unfortunately doesn't happen as much as it should.
Dizz showed me something on this tune. I was just the two of us together, and when I got to the bridge, I played the way we always play it. And he said, I said, but this is where we all play it. He said, yeah, but it's wrong. and then he hummed the way it should really go. And I never played it again, and I kept saying, I got to ask Dizzy again, what was that he told me on the bridge, and he died.
It was a D, but it
wasn't exactly like this. He said, uh-uh. I said, but if we all play it like that, he said, but it's wrong. And it's his tune. He died. I don't know what the heck it was. He said, we just play it like we play it. Incredible.
Was jazz legends Benny Golson and Albert Tootie Heath reminiscing an incident with Dizzy Gillespie from their past off of Emmett Cohen's Master Legacy Series Volume 3. Let's talk about your trio. Tell me about the cats. Russell Hall on bass, Kyle Poole on drums. You'll be playing piano. You've already gone into a little bit of the history of how you guys have connected. Can you elaborate on that?
We met and we had similar personalities. We had similar views on how we wanted to play the music. And that was a very closed-minded view about 8 years ago. It was like we wanted, play in this one specific way, and this is how it should be, and these are the cats we like. And little by little, together our horizons expanded and we got into all the different styles of music. And I think Kyle now is on the drums, incorporates, a little bit of an older style and has 100 years of drums under his fingers, but also knows how to play in an R&B or funk situation and knows all kinds of stuff about James Brown and Earth, Wind & Fire and Stevie and Prince. And he does production and is now a producer and has a recording studio. So he also, he's able to hear the music as a whole and put it together and make it feel a certain way. And that's a very rare trait for a drummer. And that's what makes one of the things that makes Kyle so special. And Russell is one of the most technically proficient and clear bass players and creative. I've never, been around anyone that's so creative. He's absorbs so much of all the great masters, but stays so true to his feelings. And he feels very deeply and creates just these textures and these whole worlds on the bass that we're able to get inside and live in for a while or for a night or for a tour. He's never afraid to take that risk. And I think the thing between the three of us is that, risk taking is one of the most important and most terrifying things in life, especially in jazz. And to know that you have people around you who you can trust, that's what brings it to life. That's what allows us to take those risks and what allows us to, stretch our ideas and our thoughts and our feelings in all kinds of different directions without ever feeling self-conscious, without ever second guessing anything. We know that we'll be there for each other. The trust is the common link and the common thread and what makes it, what makes our friendship and our musicianship so special.
Having seen your trio last January in New York at Birdland, I must say that you make it look easy, and I know it's not. Very exciting that you'll be coming to Northwest Arkansas for the first time.
That sounds great. I appreciate it. I appreciate you, you sharing our message with the people of Arkansas and the people in your circle. And I can't wait to see everyone in person. We'll be right back.
the Anna Cohen Trio will perform Saturday, December 5th in Baum Walker Hall at the Walton Arts Center in Fayetteville. The venue's social distancing policies will be in effect for that show. More about those policies and more about the show can be found at waltonartscenter.org. Anna Cohen spoke with Robert Ginsberg, and you can hear Robert's Shades of Jazz, the longest-running radio show in Northwest Arkansas, Friday nights at 10 on 91.3, and Saturdays from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. on KUAF3. KUAF3 can be found on your HD radio at KUAF.com or by asking your smart speaker to please play KUAF3.
For the Central Arkansas Library System, I'm Mark Criss with an Encyclopedia of Arkansas Minute. An East Arkansas guitarist would back up some of the greatest blues musicians of all time, though he was underrated and undercompensated. Robert Lockwood Jr. was born in 1915 in Turkey Scratch, west of Helena. He learned to play the guitar from the legendary Robert Johnson and began touring at age 17 with Johnson, Johnny Shines, and Sonny Boy Williamson. In 1941, he teamed up with Williamson to perform on King Biscuit Time on Helena's KFFA, the first regularly scheduled broadcast of country blues. Moving to Chicago in 1950, he backed such Chess record stars as Little Walter and Muddy Waters, helping to develop the Chicago Shuffle style of blues. Lockwood began performing under his own name after moving to Cleveland, Ohio in 1961. Though he earned a reputation as a talented and innovative bluesman, he never achieved the level of fame of some of the performers he backed. He continued to tour nationally and recorded an album a year until his death in 2006. To learn more, visit encyclopediaofarkansas.net.
This is 91.3 KUAF. Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and Tahlequah. 91.3 KUAF is a listener-supported service of the School of Journalism and Strategic Media at the University of Arkansas. Ozarks at Large is a production of 91.3 KUAF. Contributors to this show included Daniel Carruth, Zuzana Sitek, Catherine Sherrills, our militant grammarian, and Robert Ginsberg. Timothy Dennis produced our show. Our conversations between Roby Brock and John Brummett come to us through our partnership with Talk Business and Politics. You can learn more about that at talkbusiness.net, and you can read John Brummett's columns at arkansasonline.com. Our theme is written and performed by Daryl Sean. You can always listen to us when you'd like. If you subscribe to our free podcast, it's available through all major podcast distributors. You can also find past shows, individual stories, and interviews online at ozarksatlarge.com. We will be back with you tomorrow at noon and 7 for a brand new Wednesday edition of Ozarks at Large. Thanks so much for being with us today. Please have a great rest of your Tuesday. I'm Kyle Kellums. Thanks for listening.